It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 393. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that is all one word on Skype, Mike Tech Show. And follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. We got the wiki with all of the links to all of the past shows, and that's mtswiki.com. Have jam-packed show again, as always. I have a large stack of email, and then two great tips, one for Windows 7, and then an incredible app that came up in the pre-show tonight that I want to share with you on searching for music. Before we get started, when it comes to running a successful business, there are many things you have to get right, like hiring good people. But one thing is often overlooked, and that's protecting the data that powers your business. Did you know that 12,000 laptops are lost or stolen at airports every single week? Even a single incident of data loss isn't cheap. It can cost $10,000 or more to recover data from a single laptop or server. Businesses of all sizes and consumers use Mozy Pro to back up everything from emails, contacts, important documents, to family pictures and music. It's automatic and it works. One advertising executive's company lost an entire bank of servers, which nearly brought their business to its knees. Then he found Mozy Pro. He says, "I was shocked at how fast it works, and their people know how to work with Macs." Mozy Pro business backup plans are affordable, and there are no contracts to sign or hardware to buy. Give our friends at Mozy a call. They've been doing this for a long time and run the most secure, most trusted online backup service. Right now, you can save 15% by using promo code PODCAST15. Call 877-669-9776. That's 877-669-9776 or visit mozypro.com. That's mozypro.com. For the first link tonight, I have a Windows 7 tip, and it's how to enable Windows Mobility Center on a desktop computer. This was sent to me by MS Small Business in the chat last night when I was recording Tech Vet Show. He sent this to me, and if you are on a desktop, and you try to go to the mobility center, you're going to get an error that says Windows Mobility Center is available only on laptops. The mobility center is a great way so you can put your desktop in presentation mode. So let's say you want to disable sound or you want to make some adjustments on your desktop while you are For some reason, when you're making a presentation from your desktop, that's why they really enable it for laptops. So the first thing you have to do is download this registry hack that enables the Mobility Center program to work. So once you download that, you will be able to then, at the command line, when you click start in the search bar there, you'll be able to type mblctr.exe, and you get the Mobility Center, and you can mute your sound. You can turn on if you're presenting. You can go to a balanced power, or if you are not plugged in or plugged in, you change your battery state. You can connect to an external display. You get lots of great little options. I never even realized this app existed. So thank you, MS Small Business Specialist, sharing that tip, and you know, give it a try. The next program I want to talk about is SongR. It's a freeware program that lets you quickly type and download any song, pretty much any song that you're looking for. It's fast. We were playing with this in the pre-show. It just works. I recommend, I'm going to have the link to the song, and this, I'm going to have a link to the app, and this was provided by Jerry in the chat, and I highly recommend the portable version because we like portable. Once you run this program, it's very simple, very clean interface, and all you got to do is type an artist or a name, and while you're typing that name, you just hit enter, and you will be quickly presented with a list of the names of the artist, the song. You have a column for duration, bit rate you can sort by, size. There's a score, high, medium, or low, the speed, the reliability, and the search engine that it's using to get music. If you want to download the song, all you have to do is right-click and then download. Very, very nice app, and you want to check that out, and it's called SongR, S-O-N-G-R. Thank you very, very much, Jerry, for sharing that. The first email is from the same Jerry who shared that great song app, and he wrote in response to migrating the user profile issue from last week. And he says, I was just listening to the podcast discussing migrating a user's profile after migrating to a domain. I've used Reprofiler, the profile link repair tool, to do that. And I've used it when a user's profile is corrupted and it is given a new blank default profile. It appears to work on all current versions of Windows. I can't remember if I linked to it in the chat before the live show, or chat during the live show. So Reprofiler is a freeware tool for manipulating users' profiles on Windows 7, Vista, XP 2000, Server 2003, and Server 2008. If you face an issue where you are unable to access a user's data and settings, you may want to check out Reprofiler. I will have a link to that. Thank you very much. This is from Darren, and he says, in show 392, you had a question from a listener about users' folders and an easy way to swap from a local profile to a domain profile. It's not a total solution, but take a look at Reprofiler. And he sent that in. Thank you very much. So we got two recommendations for that. A thumbs up for that utility. This is small tip from Randy. And he says, I've been listening to you for quite some time now on my daily commutes back and forth to work. Your podcasts are ones that never get skipped over. Besides the great content, you know how to make things very entertaining. Here's hoping I can pass a little something on that might be helpful in return. There is a little app I ran across while upgrading a desktop for myself called Transfer on LAN. When moving files and folders from one PC to another, especially when setting up a new one for myself, it's always very time-consuming transferring my thousands of files to the new box. What Transfer on LAN lets you do is move files from one PC to another across your local network. This little app works on Windows, the Mac OS, and Linux. Basically, anything that can run Java. No going out to the internet and back with your files. Drop a set of nested folders containing a large number of files on the PC. You select from a list and it moves all the files to a specified folder you get to specify. It's a bit geeky, and it might not seem simple at first, but once you get the hang of it, it's pretty cool. It was a sure enough win for me. It worked on Lion OS, Windows 7, Ubuntu 10.04, and Linux Mint 12 in my testing. Thought it might be useful. One file did cause a bit of a hiccup. There was a non-standard character in the file name as the result of a copy and paste. Transfer on LAN would not send it and then froze up. So I'll have the link, and thanks for all you've done for the tech community. And this is Randy Davis from Beaufort, Georgia. Thank you very much. I didn't try big transfers, but it is pretty easy to use. I've actually downloaded and played with it earlier today. One thing I'm noticing is the use of strange characters. More and more, my users and clients are putting strange characters, and they're getting carried away with really long file names. And I'm getting to see some of those issues from the free version of SyncBack that doesn't like those extra long names. Just beware of that. And some programs are very sensitive to file names. I try to coach my users and clients to, you know, don't go crazy. You know, and don't go crazy with those different characters. One thing was really interesting when I was at my client that's a radio station. They have an app that's very sensitive to spaces. And the MP3 file that was for one of the commercials had a space in it because they had McDonald's and they had the MC and then a space. Well, it just in their file name, and it wouldn't read it. And I said, what the heck, let's take the space out. And it came right up, and it went right into that app that they use for the radio station. So just something that I've been noticing, and you want to definitely make sure that files are staying in an orderly naming convention, and the simpler the better. You won't have any issues with programs, and especially trying to copy them. This is about the end of XP support and Windows 7 migration. It's a list of migration guides and tools from the Springboard Series blog that will assist a company in doing a migration from XP to Windows 7. This becomes very, very important in 2013. I know it sounds like a long way off, but it's a lot of companies that have very large commitment to Windows XP, and it for a big deployment or migration, it will take a lot of time. Now, my small businesses, it's been pretty easy, a slam dunk. The biggest one was that I've had has been 20 users. If you are involved in a big XP deployment, big XP, lots of XP workstations that need to be converted, this is definitely a nice place to go to understand using the user state migration tool, the Microsoft deployment toolkit. And I want to thank Alan Nation for sending that link to me. Thank you very much. This email is from Patrick, and it's a tool to make Windows Update XP work again. Hi, Mike. I discovered this tool today and successfully used it on a Windows XP home machine. I had spent over an hour looking at Microsoft fixes for Windows Update error, and he lists the error 0x800-70424. I found that a WUA userv key was missing from the registry. It's a WUA userv key was missing from the registry. This Windows XP update bits fix, the script will attempt to fix common problems with the Windows XP background intelligent transfer service. It fixes the cause of several Windows update stop codes problems. It fixes issues with Windows update time codes not matching the server. It will also fix specific bits corruption caused by the semantic SYMNRT removal tool. The latest version also attempts to repair registry damage done by some viruses. Patrick, thank you very much for that tip. It will be in the show notes. Let's take a moment. I want to thank GoToMeeting for being a sponsor. We develop trust in people we know, but we don't really know someone we can't see. That can be a tough hurdle in business with employees and clients around the world. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces, a simple online meeting service with group HD video. Helps you get better connected to the people you depend on for success. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a click to instantly collaborate with your team or clients in real time from anywhere in the world. We use it for meetings here. Anytime I need to present to a client, I go to GoToMeeting right away. It is great, and I know I have gotten business for being able to present using GoToMeeting. It has helped my consulting business. You can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. You can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. So make sure to use that promo code PODCAST and get your free 30-day trial. This email is from Vaughn, and the subject, hosting and podcasting for the blind. He's a listener from the Philippines and has been listening to the Mike Tech Show for the past year. I've been using Site5 for my company's web hosting and have been very happy with their uptime and service. They are now owned by Planet, so I am not sure how this will affect support and service. For your listener who is visually impaired, I would point him to Jonathan Nadal of Frostbite Media, who is a podcaster and also has a video cast on YouTube. And that's just www.frostbitemedia.org. Although Jonathan's focus is on Linux, I am sure he can provide tips on the concepts of podcasting for the visually impaired. Thank you very, very much for that. I really appreciate that. And I'm going to pass that along to the listener who wrote in about who is blind and is looking to start a podcast. This is a question from Steve. This question is from Steve. I have been working on computers for over 20 years now, and I am stumped. My son has an AMD X4, 2.8 gigahertz, 2 gigs of RAM. I have an 8 gig kit ready to go in, but his problem is every time he inserts his headphones, any headphones, into the back speaker port, his mouse gets jerky. Any ideas? Also, I have been watching your show forever, and I have meant to write in to tell you to stop telling people how to transfer over customers' settings, PST files, music, etc. Get VABS auto backup for text. It will do up to 20 users at one time, and it gets everything. Just be sure to right-click and run as administrator. If I only had 5 pieces of software to keep, it would be my top pick. It will also work on a drive that won't boot Windows. And this is Steve-O. He followed up with an answer to his question. He actually solved this problem before I've gotten a chance to read it. And he says, I found an answer to the problem. It was related to the speaker system that he was plugging his headphones into. He was not, as he originally told me, plugging directly into the motherboard jack. I do have another question for the show if you want. I have an HP less than 2 years old, a P6320Y quad-core unit that the SATA controller quit working on the motherboard. I tried to install a Vantec UGT ST220R PCI SATA controller and will start to load Windows and then blue screens. Is there a way to load the drivers before I can even run Windows? Or do you think it may be a BIOS issue on the card that needs updating? Thanks again, Mike. Absolutely look for a BIOS update. I only update the BIOS when I'm running into some kind of an issue. And we want to take that out of the equation. Make sure you have the latest BIOS. That's one. Two, the card could be a problem. Is there any way you can take this card to another computer, pop it in, and see if it can boot? Maybe the card's bad. You may need to return it and exchange it. Go into the BIOS, and depending on the BIOS of the system, I'm not sure what you're going to see, look for what you want to be able to boot, the boot order, and where the main drive is going to come from. Is it the built-in SATA controller that you're not using, a third-party controller? Make sure your settings are open, that that PCI slot is available, that you can put things in it. Definitely want to look at disabling. Thanks, Uncle Al, in the chat for mentioning this. Look at disabling the onboard SATA controller. That may be enough to get this to work. Check that out and see if any of those things help, and let me know. And thank you for the auto backup for text. Thank you. We've mentioned that utility a lot. I get a lot of recommendations for that. This is from Gail, and this is a Windows problems PC not running smoothly anymore. Time to upgrade or reinstall? That's the subject. Hi, Mike. I just found your site and podcast. Where have you been all my life? So, I have a question for you. My Windows Vista has never worked well after several virus attacks, the Security Shield virus and others. I have run malware, spyware, adware, A-squared, and a Kaspersky tool, and still have corrupt or missing files that affect programs from working smoothly, missing icons, and programs in Start, unresponsive browser pages in Chrome and Firefox, Adobe Flash won't upgrade. So I'm trying to wrap my brain around this. Isn't an upgrade easier than a reinstall to fix my problems with my PC? I can upgrade to Windows 7 or reinstall my current Vista. So as a novice plus to intermediate user, I'm willing to tackle a reinstall, but is it easier to upgrade as a fix? I listened to your podcast and checklist from 2005 Windows reinstall. It requires quite a commitment of time to prepare for a reinstall. Absolutely, it does. If I just upgrade to Windows 7, will that fix any missing or corrupt files and remove system-infected files from Vista? Or will I have the same issues just with a new operating system? Great, great series of questions here. First, I believe only in doing clean installs of Windows 7. I don't believe in upgrading at all. So that puts you into that checklist and I'm doing a brand new install. You got to wipe and clean. Is there a chance if you do an in-place upgrade that it can fix everything? Yes, it's a chance, but it's not worth the risk. Prepare and do the clean install. But I think we can fix your problems. When you go to tweaking.com, and I'm going to have a link in the show notes to great utility that I've talked about in the past, I want you to run this utility, go right to the last option, and start the custom option, and it's going to ask you to do a restore point. Let it create the restore point. When you get to this advanced custom options, it's going to be a long list of 19 different things that can be fixed on the computer. I want you to select them all and let it run. It's going to go through the permissions on the registry. It's going to unhide files. It might be repairing things that don't need to be repaired, but it can't hurt. Your system seems like it had such a bad infection that there's so many things that need to be repaired. I believe this utility will get your Vista up and running. Now, personal opinion, I think you should go to Windows 7. But even if you're going to go to Windows 7, I think you should go through the process of doing this repair for the experience and see if it does fix everything, because it's important. Virus fighting and cleaning is a multi-step process. You clean and remove the infection, then you got to repair the PC. All these infections, they leave behind sometimes significant damages where files are hidden, things are removed, permissions changed, registry entries changed. You can't run any executable. There are so many things that are broken that you need to go through the process of a repair. I had some great links, and I'm going to put them back. I did a really good presentation at the Philadelphia Area Computer Society where I did a presentation on that very topic, and there's a large list of links that I recommend for cleaning, then repairing. And those links are invaluable. You go to them, download all of those programs. There's three repair utilities. My favorite is the one from tweaking.com. I like the portable version, so this way you don't even have to go through installing it. These utilities should be the core of your USB stick that you're going to use to repair. This, I think, is going to help you not just for now, but for going down the road for a long time with helping other friends, members of the family, whatever you're running into, just knowing that you should have this process in place where you can attack the infection, remove it, and then repair the system. And you should be able to do this in a couple hours. Good luck with moving forward on this, and let me know which path you've taken and how you made out. And I really appreciate you. Thank you for finding the show and writing in. I'm glad you enjoy it, and please stay subscribed and let me know how you're making out with all this. This is from Paul. Have you tried this software? Hi. I have tried this browser and not heard you mention it, as one of the reviews in it is like Firefox on steroids, and you can install it alongside Firefox and use both at the same time. It's called Pale Moon, and the link is www.palemoon.org. I have never heard of this because I guess there's no room in my life for another browser. I use Firefox all the time. And sometimes I still have to use Internet Explorer for depending on the site. I think if I was going to move away from Firefox, my natural instinct would be to go to Chrome, which I've been resisting a little bit. I know Chrome's fast. A lot of people love it. One of my sons, Ryan, he swears by it on his Mac, on his iMac. He just loves it. I haven't given it enough time. I've tried Chrome, and I just can't get used to it. I'm such a Firefox person now. I'm so ingrained in, I guess I'm set in my ways. So it's hard to embrace another browser. And let me know what you think. And if you have any experience or heard of or worked with this Pale Moon, let me know. This next question is from Eric. I am in charge of IT at a small company. I take care of low-level issues and use a consultant for issues that require more expertise. I'm studying for my CompTIA certs on the side, and I'm just wondering what your opinion is about the certification. What certifications would you consider valuable for someone who is just starting out in the tech industry? Also, it is time for me to consider what type of phones I want to get to replace our current aging BlackBerry stock. I'm a bit torn. We already have our BES infrastructure in place, but BlackBerries can be a bit frustrating to work with. I am also concerned about the doom and gloom forecast I have heard for RIM. That's Research in Motion, the company behind the BlackBerries. I agree with you there. I don't want to get new RIM devices and get locked into a contract only to have RIM go belly up for 6 months. I'm considering iPhones, but I have a certain contempt for Apple products, perhaps out of ignorance. A distant third option I'm considering is getting a Windows phone. Any thoughts? Thanks. Well, I'm not a fan of Windows phones. I know I'm going to hear from a lot of listeners. If you love your Windows phone, then send me an email and make your case. Okay. I am not a Windows phone fan. I love Blackberries, but I understand your frustration. I had a client, well, they're still a client, but they used to have a Blackberry Enterprise server, and they had a small deployment of Blackberries. They're now all iPhones. So here's the question. I assume since you have a BEZ, Blackberry Enterprise server environment, that you have your own Exchange server. And if that's the case, then that means, do you have ActiveSync running, which you probably do, and it's available, and are the ports opened properly to be able to get in? You may want to get a pilot going with one or two iPhones. I don't know if they, I don't think Apple provides like trial subscriptions, you know, to test. That's a shame, because if you go to Verizon or AT&T, maybe I don't know how many we're talking about, but maybe you can get a phone from one of them, maybe a used phone that you can test with. Go over what is needed for the phone. So the first thing, what's everybody doing with the phones? You got to get an idea of the usage. You got to make sure, I don't know how many users we're talking about, but what is everybody doing with their phone? Are they just using it to send, to type emails and talk? Is there any custom apps? I don't think I hear that your company has any custom BlackBerry apps, because that would certainly lock you in. iPhones are very flexible. You will find lots of people in your company, especially management, they're going to like the breadth of apps that you can download and use. And what about Android? You don't like apps, but you know, you don't like the iPhone, but what about a good Android phone that can use ActiveSync to get email? There's another option there. You might want to do a bake-off with an Android and an iPhone to replace your BlackBerry. And that may be enough to have a couple people, you know, work with that and take a look at the functionality and how it communicates back to your server. And you're really going to have to almost put a little focus group together within your company and help have them help you make that decision, rather than you make the decision and kind of force it down their throats. Get them to buy into it. Have a little meeting and talk about what they want to do, because you may find that all of your users on the BlackBerry may already be, you know, boy, I wish I had an iPhone, or I wish I had this other Android phone, because there's so many more things I want to do. The big thing to get used to going from the BlackBerry to the iPhone, it's instead of typing with my thumbs, I'm now typing with my index fingers. That was an awkward adjustment that took a couple weeks, and my thumbs didn't know what to do. Once I lost the use of the BlackBerry. So it kind of forced me into the iPhone world as I moved from the corporate world to being on my own. I love my iPhone, and you'd have to pry it out of my cold, dead hands to get rid of it, because I just like it. It just has all of the apps that I could ever want or use. Now, if you could give me those same apps on an Android phone, I'd probably like the Android phone. So it's all about the apps. And I think it is smart to start moving away from BlackBerry. RIM's future is definitely in doubt. Great email. Now, that was only half your question. The other half, certifications. I got a lot of opinion on this. What you're doing now is so much more important for your on-the-job experience, and what you're learning is so important that is worth so much more than a certification. Now, I'm not knocking certifications. Certifications are good to get the interview. That might get you in the door. It won't get you hired. Talking about your experience is going to get you hired. Deploying things on the side in your office and different solutions that you can play with in a, you know, even in a lab environment, just to test with and just to play, get as much experience as you possibly can. And then with that, the certifications. Now, certifications can take you so many different ways. There's, you know, the networking certifications and Cisco, and they are not only expensive, but take a great learning commitment that in the end will yield or should yield some really good paying jobs. There's, you know, still I constantly see openings for Cisco engineers want it. I know there's work available, and certainly from a consulting standpoint, there is. You have to go with your interest. Are you interested in just servers and doing that kind of admin and then going down the Microsoft certification route versus just regular computer repair and some of the basics? You really have to take a look at what your interest is, because there's so many areas and you can't be certified in everything. Now, one of the things I regretted as I was in the corporate world, I didn't take advantage of something. I had no certifications, but what I did not do, I have a Bachelor of Science degree in business administration, but I never went back for my MBA. And that not having my MBA prevented me from going into that next step of senior management. You have to have an MBA. If you're going to be an IT director or higher or CIO, that's it. You have to get an MBA. Certifications, be damned. They mean nothing. It's all about the formal education. So what is your career path? What are you looking to do? And you may find the education route going back to school. You didn't mention, do you have a bachelor's degree? That may be more important to work for than a certification. So I'm just giving you other options based on what you want to achieve. Do you want to supervise people? Do you want to be in middle management or in any kind of a management position? You're going to need a degree. You're going to need your business degree. Having the tech knowledge and the passion with a business degree, you'll be able to manage a tech group. So there's lots of things that you might be able to combine that you might be able to use to help you, I guess, you're already employed, but to stay employed and have a high rate where you will be able to easily, if you want to change jobs, it's not going to be a problem. You know, you could start interviewing for a better position somewhere, another company, or maybe within your own company. You know, as they see that you're striving to better yourself and improve, maybe they will create opportunities. There could be opportunities there. Great questions, Eric. And please let me know what you're deciding, especially for the phones and then also on your certifications. And I hope I helped you out there. Let me know if I did, or if you have additional questions to follow up on what I said, you know, please email me back and let me know. It's February 1st. And as I look at my affiliate links from and earnings from January, it was a fabulous month. Matter of fact, it was almost as great as December. And I want to thank you so much for your continued support of using my Amazon link. Thank you very, very much for sharing it and using it. And that's amazon.mikenation.net. And then you can also just go to miketechshow.com. On the left-hand side of the website, if you scroll down, you'll see the big affiliate ad for Amazon. Click on that. Your price stays the same, but a commission comes back to support the Mike Tech Show, and I really appreciate that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for sharing that link and using it. I really appreciate it. It does make a difference. That is it for tonight's show. No music. I want to thank you all for downloading the podcast and staying subscribed. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, and we'll be back at the normal Thursday night time next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.